Oh, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Adventures on Infant Island. I'm your host, Michael Olivares, and together with me is good old...
Jenny Park.
All right, Jenny. Well, we're going to have ourselves a much more mellow, much more cool-headed episode than usual. Up until now, we dealt with largely fantasy and, you know, iconic action and science fiction stuff like that, you know, over the last couple of episodes. But we're going to go ahead and try something a little bit different this time around. We are still going to maintain our same rules, which is to take two pieces of media, most particularly movies, that have a similar theme. And then what we're going to do is have reviews about these films that are pretty major ones with us over the last few years and kind of find out where we are with them now, most particularly through the eyes of Jenny here, which should be pretty entertaining. But first, I just wanted to kind of jump in and say, Jenny, we were having a discussion recently when we had a Korean barbecue. I believe it was earlier this week. Anyway, earlier this week, and the discussion kind of came right into where we are as far as music, and not just in regards to music that we love, but in regards to, you know, how we see habits happen with those that aren't quite as, I don't know, obsessive about new stuff as we tend to be, or folks like us tend to be. And I just wanted to find out if there was anything else you wanted to add about that. You know, you and I were talking. We were in that Korean barbecue place that used to be really quiet. And after all these years, now it's really jumping on a midday. And you have Korean pop bouncing off the walls. And the place has a lot of young servers now. And it's a very different atmosphere than it was before. So any thoughts on you know, the atmosphere and how that's changed and how much you've changed over the years?
I think the atmosphere was really strange for me, because when me and Mike first went to this particular Korean barbecue place, it was somewhat quiet, you know, no music, and, you know, it was usually the owner serving you, and they have these, like, new, like, young servers now, and the most entertaining thing is the music that plays in the background, and also a lot of non-Korean people visiting the place. And the other day, when we're listening to the music in the background, it kind of made me feel as if I was, you know, going back 10 years, you know, I guess, like around early 2000, 1999, around there, because, you know, they were playing a lot of, like, Korean teeny bopper pop music, and this is the stuff that I was sort of listening to when I was like in my teens. But now, as, like, you know, someone in, you know, her mid-20s, things have changed for me, and even the music that I've been listening to over the last 3 years have changed. You know, I stopped listening to K-pop for the most part, because it seemed like there was no variety or no change. And for me, I just want music that, you know, helps me grow as a person. Also something that's original and something new, not something that has been done, like, so many times over and over again. And that's the reason why I've been listening to alternative and indie for the most part nowadays.
And I think one of the things that was, one of the songs that was playing, I think I made a little swipe at it, because it was more or less a ballady song. And it was one of the things that, you know, I listened to my fair share of Asian pop music over the years, and I have a, you know, decent collection of it. However, one of the things that always kind of, I don't know, got to me about pop music, particularly in Asia, is the incessant want to imitate, you know, the ballad versions of, like, the theme songs in, like, Disney animated movies in the 90s. And, you know, you got the soaring strings, you got the easy beat, and the very overtly expressive vocals that kind of border more on being formatted rather than being emotional. And I was wondering about, like, you know, is that probably one of the things that really kind of got you out of the whole thing?
Well, it's not necessarily that. I don't mind the strings in the background and, like, the Disney type of music, you know, from time to time. But when it's just that, it bores the heck out of me. I mean, I just want diversity. I mean, I'm not going to be mean about it and say, okay, I dismiss that completely. It's not that. I just want diversity. That's all. You know, I don't want them to just do the same things over and over again. You know, that's all.
That's the same thing could be said about popular music anywhere. And that same thing goes for movies. And I feel like, you know, we can, you know, wax, you know, pretentious about any type of film, especially when we see so many of the same kind of cookie-cutter movies made every year. Even in Hollywood, we have this almost constantly. And, you know, after a while, it kind of feels like there's no... Sometimes it just feels like there's no hope left. So whenever we see something that's a little bit different, we can't help but want to, you know, grab onto it. And in the case of this week's discussion, I felt like it was really important to go and examine a genre or type of film that we normally would never tackle. And so the challenge is here. We're actually going to tackle two movies featuring... Well, it's going to be a weird one. We're featuring love stories, Hong Kong style, a la the mid-90s. So our two selections are going to be starting off with Peter Chan's movie Comrades, Almost a Love Story, made in 1996. And then we're going to follow it up with a short talk about Wong Kar-wai's award-winning favorite, Happy Together, from 1997. And essentially the theme running through both of these films is essentially seems to be, well, not only are they love stories of a sort, but they're also sort of journey stories where our characters are in a different milieu than they're used to. And you get beautiful photography and locales, but both films take very different turns. And that's what's really going to make this an interesting chat. So just like jazz, you know, it's really what's in between the beats, not necessarily the beat itself. And you got to remember that that's part of, at least for me, gives music its soul. It's what you hear in the little tiny pieces in the corner. It's not necessarily the format. And so it means it's possible that even pop music can be awesome if applied well and with enough spirit. So let's just go right into Comrades, Almost a Love Story. I feel ashamed that I didn't catch this movie when it, you know, a little earlier on, like say in the late 90s. You actually exposed me to this movie, I think, when we started hanging out in around the late 2000s. And I mean, tell me about you. What was your exposure to it the first time?
Well, it's a long story. Because I was a fan of Leon Liming at the time. I think I was still like a teenager, and I was like really into pretty Asian boys at the time. Anywhere from mid 90s to early 2000s, I was like a sucker for Chinese, Taiwanese, Hong Kong, Korean, and Japanese pretty boys, and Leon Lai was one of those guys that kind of captured my heart at the time. And I was just looking for something to watch because I've seen a lot of his movies, and I wanted to watch something that I haven't seen yet. And then I was just looking around, and then I somehow ran into it by accident. Yeah. And I saw it, and it was really good. And as a matter of fact, I first saw this movie via VHS. I rented it from a Korean market, oddly enough. But then later on, I bought the VCD, you know, in Chinatown.
VCD might be best explained as a VHS on a CD-ROM, a little piece of sort of never made history here in the States. If you guys frequent a lot of Asian video stores as we do, well, I don't even know if you'll find these anymore. But VCD, just look it up online. It's pretty fun.
You still can find it, actually, you know, in L.A. Chinatown. The store that I usually go to, they carry them for dirt cheap.
Usually like $1.50.
No, actually about like $2-3. $5 tops. No more than that.
Yeah, so we got Comrades, a Love Story, made in 1996, and it's directed by Peter Chan, who's gone on to an illustrious career of making pretty big, you know, blockbuster films. Most notably, most recently, surprisingly, was Warlords from 2007 that had, it was an action epic, you know, like a period epic featuring like, Jet Li, Takeshi Kaneshiro, and Andy Lau. And we had a really hard time watching it last night, to be honest. But we're going to talk about Comrades here. Comrades is it's kind of a period piece. It's dealing with Leon Lai Ming, and also co-stars the ever-wonderful Maggie Cheung. And this is a sort of a love story spanning over the course of 10 years, beginning in Hong Kong in 1986, where two separate souls from different parts of mainland China accidentally meet each other while searching for their dreams in Hong Kong, long before, you know, British let go of their rule. And it's essentially just a sort of love story that is taken from two totally different viewpoints and two totally different cultures between these two different people. And the first hour of the film is all about, you know, them getting settled in, And you also have him meeting Maggie Cheung's character, who is a little bit... She's a Southerner, right?
Yes, a yeah. Southern Chinese.
Yeah.
And also... Leon Lai's character, he is like from the Shanghai area, like Eastern China. Mm. So they're very different culturally, even though they're both Chinese.
Right. And the thing is, their reasons for being in Hong Kong, you know, being a sort of a land of opportunity at the time, they both have very different reasons as for it. In this film, Leon Lai's reasons are because he wants to save up money so that he could bring his bride-to-be over from the mainland. Whereas Maggie Cheung's character, being a Southerner and having a sort of a background that pretty much is all about money, is a much more aggressive person. And basically, it seems to not sleep at all in order to attain her goals, which are always kept kind of ambiguous until, you know, the audience gets to discover. We'll try our best not to spoil the movie for you. But, of course, you know, one thing leads to another. Things get a little complicated. And we have ourselves a very pretty movie featuring some Jingle Ma photography that is very much in line with Christopher Doyle style photography, like with Wong Kar-wai movies, which we'll discuss later. But overall, Jenny, I mean, what are your thoughts after all these years? What are your thoughts on this movie?
Well, when I first saw it, I just, you know, watched it with the simple mindset. You know, I wasn't really looking for anything too deep. You know, I wasn't, like, studying the characters or studying every little details that are happening in the background. I was just watching it just to see Leon Lai Ming, you know, at the time. I was just fangirling over, you know, somebody that I, you know, really liked, you know. And that was just it. It was very simple. And every time I watch it, it's, like, different now. You know, I'm learning something new about the characters. I'm learning something about, you know, the background of the story, something more deeper than when I first saw the movie when I was a teen. So I guess this just goes to show how much I grew up in a way.
Yeah, but I mean, what do you think now that differently that you, as opposed to what you thought then? Like, what are you learning now about this love story movie now than you did before?
Like back then, I used to just think that love stories were just a simple thing. A guy and a girl falls in love and that's it. But now I feel that there's something more to it than just a guy and a girl falling in love. There's so much more to it than just that. And I feel that two people in a relationship have to really work hard to maintain their relationship.
But we're also discussing in regards to them, because it's clear that Leon Lai's character is already pretty much set to be married to a woman we barely see on screen, whereas Maggie doesn't seem to want to be involved in any sort of serious thing. But, you know, being as how life works out, you know, life is what happens when you're making other plans. You know, to look at that in a sort of context of you understanding, you know, how maybe the world of Hong Kong in 1986 and how Hong Kong was changing. Any thoughts about that in regards to their relationship?
I guess, like, back in the 80s, before Hong Kong went back to China, it was much... I think people are much more simple back then, a little more simple than now. I mean, people seem to be more goal and money-oriented, I guess. And I guess relationships can change because of those things. But the cool thing about this movie is, the more I watch it, the characters do grow in a way, and they do learn different things through, you know, obstacles and challenging situations. Kind of like with, you know, Maggie's character. She seemed like a person that just wanted to make money, but she fell in love. And it seemed like she was holding that in, but she did fall in love.
Yeah, which I have to kind of throw this in, is that Maggie Cheung's performance, she did win an award for it, I believe. The film actually received a lot of accolades when it first came out. I believe that Maggie Cheung's performance won a lot of acclaim, but the film won, like, Best Picture that year at the Hong Kong Film Awards, and it's rated among one of the most acclaimed Chinese movies of all time. I believe it's, like, somewhere in, like, the number 28 in the 100 of all time. But the thing is, it's all about, when we're talking about Maggie Cheung's character, you see the amount of jobs she has. Yeah. Can you count the jobs she has?
She was working as a janitor at an English school,
yeah.
or a school that teaches English for people that want to learn the language. And she would, like, try to make commissions off of bringing new students.
Yeah.
And Leon Lai's character was one of them.
Yeah.
And also, she was working at McDonald's, you know, as a cashier. And then, like, later on, you know, she became, like, a real estate personnel. And she was, like, working as a masseuse. And she even had, like, a business where she was like a florist or something
well,
like
she
that.
She was actually running a floral business even before all this.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant to
yeah,
say.
Exactly.
I was going to get to that. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is like she was so like money and goal oriented that she didn't mind not getting any sleep and just working all these odd jobs.
Yeah. It's her character seems to be driven for one major reason. And before, it's on one level, it's admirable. And at the same time, it's an interesting performance from Maggie because it actually does something for Maggie Cheung that she hadn't, I mean, outside of Wong Kar-wai's movies, hadn't had a chance to really explore. She actually plays a real, true-to-life person. Not an ideal, not Jackie Chan's girlfriend again, and not another, you know, damsel in distress and another action wuxia spectacular, but a real character that is not necessarily flattering, but attractive because she's kind of realistic and maybe ridiculously stubborn. But you got Leon Lai's character, who's a little bit of a more simpleton.
I think Leon Lai's character is kind of like a country bumpkin, you
yeah.
know, sort of. Well, his goal was much more simple. His goal wasn't to become this rich person like, you know, Maggie's character.
Yeah.
You know, he just wanted to lead a simple life. He wanted to make enough money to just bring his bride over from Wuxi, which is his hometown,
right.
to Hong Kong. And he only had like one or two jobs. He didn't have all these multiple jobs like Maggie's character did. So they were kind of different in a way, but somehow fate, you know, brought them together. And I think Mike will explain this to you in more detail, but it seems like they used a lot of fate in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Fate and destiny seem to be a humongous player. Seems to be a humongous player in this film. And, I mean, I would argue to the detriment of the remainder of the movie. Because when I think the filmmakers were realizing that they'll eventually have to end this movie, twists of fate really allow the relationship to take some serious hard lefts in the second hour of the film and take our characters out of this sort of comfort zone of their mutual goals and accidental love, if you ever call love an accident. But it's really a strange movie if you look at it from the beginning because it feels very naturalistic. At the beginning, it feels very honest. But then once you get to the second half, and I'm guessing that maybe it's this way by design, but it's almost to the point of I don't know, I don't want to say ludicrous, but it's almost there. Just taking twists and turns with our characters, separating them, taking them far away from each other, having them with different people, and them realizing that they're not really for the people that they thought they were meant to be. And I think you can get the idea of where this is going, but I have to throw in how fate works in the form of an amazing side performance by the legendary Eric Zhang, who plays a gangster in the film who pops up in the second half of the movie, and he shines beautifully. If you guys are familiar at all with Eric Zhang, I highly recommend. Well, actually, I'd say, hey, if you've ever seen Infernal Affairs, remember the gangster in that movie, that little guy? That's him. He's wonderful in the movie, and he basically plays a triad with a heart of gold. And there are a lot of other supporting players throughout the film, but in the end, it's the triumvirate of these three actors who really shine. Any thoughts on the second half of the movie and Eric Zhang?
Second half of the movie, I just feel that, like what Mike mentioned, they used a lot of like accidental fate to make the story move a bit. That was like my only negative feeling towards the second half of the movie. Other than that, it was quite okay. And Eric Zhang, you know, I just adored him. You know, I thought he was really nice and sweet, even though he was supposed to be this triad guy. And I don't want to spoil this, but then I really like his tattoo on the back. I'm not going to tell you what kind of tattoo, but I'm just going to say that he has a cute tattoo. So look out for that.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to miss it. It's such a big thing in the whole movie. And, you know, but another great, cool, small role in here is might be of interest of movie fans is going to be of Mr. Christopher Doyle, who is the, you know, the renowned cinematographer for Wong Kar-wai throughout his days, right on down to, you know, In the Mood for Love and a lot of other great movies. And he's also gone ahead and photographed a hero.
Zhang Yimou.
But Yeah. If Zhang Yimou's photography, well, his films use Christopher Doyle and to good use, but I still have to say that Doyle's work in the 90s, where it's much more handheld and loose, is really exciting. And to see him in front of the camera instead of behind it as an English teacher that has his own style, it's pretty amusing. But I guess as a whole, I mean, you know, we've gone back to this movie several times, you know, over the years, and you've always taught me some interesting context about you know, China and the Chinese moving into Hong Kong and the context of that, and the reason why they refer to Teresa Teng a lot in the movie. There's a well-known singer, a legendary singer. What's the significance of Teresa Teng and her music and her significance to the plot of the movie? Because I believe that actually contributes to the real title of the movie, right? That
yes.
Comrades is just the English title, but the real title is different.
Well, the real title in Mandarin is Tian Mi Mi. Well, that is actually a song title by a well-known singer named Teresa Teng. She's legendary. She actually passed away in 1995, if I can remember correctly. She was kind of like this, you know, Inca singer, you know, in a way. It's like a Taiwanese version of an Inca singer. I think her parents were like born and raised in Shandong province, and I think she was born and raised in Taiwan. But she was like pretty popular all over like Asia and Southeast Asia. But anyways, like from what I understand, a lot of the southern Chinese, like Cantonese or Hong Kong people that listen to Teresa Teng, the community mistakes them as a mainlander. And I guess, you know, that was the thing that made Maggie Cheung's character feel a little bit embarrassed, maybe, because she didn't want to be exposed that she was a mainlander, because she was trying so hard to cover up the fact that she moved over to Hong Kong from southern China.
Right.
She was trying to act as if she was a Hong Konger, but she really wasn't.
So you say there would be some sort of social stigma back in the 80s about being thought of as a mainlander?
Yeah, because, like, I guess a lot of, you know, immigrants are moving over to Hong Kong from the mainland. Like what Mike was saying earlier, it's like the land of opportunity, because there's more jobs, you know, and there's more money to be made in Hong Kong than other parts of China at the time. Because, you know, at this time, like especially in the 80s, China wasn't very strong economically. Not yet anyways.
Right.
Not until the 90s. So,
right.
You know, the people in the mainland thought that they could make a better living going to Hong Kong. It's
right.
Kind of like, you know, the American dream in a way.
Yeah.
And I think Maggie's character and Leon's character thought that they can, you know, have a better life or you know, or make a better living in Hong Kong.
Right.
So that's the real reason why they went over to Hong Kong, both of them.
And yet fate leads them completely somewhere completely far away from Hong Kong by the end of the movie, which makes that kind of an interesting dynamic. They wind up somewhere completely way off and a lot more familiar to our own backyards. But yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating movie, albeit it does, I still feel like it suffers in the last hour, because it just seems so desperate to wrap it up in some sort of, you know, serendipitous manner, to the point where I don't know, it's a little bit too saccharine. But that said, the performances are so wonderful by both Leon Lai and especially Maggie Cheung, who does beautiful work with just her eyes and just her expressions. It was a good, you know, progenitor before we got to her performance in The Mood for Love. So those of you really who are big fans of Kar Wai's movies and of her in Kar Wai's movies, you seriously need to dig this movie up.
Also, if you're familiar with her in the Jackie Chan movies, be ready for a surprise, because she's not the same.
Yeah.
Because in those little Jackie Chan movies, as you know, as her being this little cute girl, you know, being like a fangirl or whatever you want to call it, you know, she's not that in this movie.
Well, I think we've all seen that by Kar Wai. Kar Wai basically made her glow in a wonderful, mature way.
And then the funny thing is, this movie isn't from Kar Wai. That's the funny thing.
Well, I think honestly, though, it was very inspired by Kar Wai's style of filmmaking, which was closer to like the French New Wave. Whereas this movie is kind of a cross between a little bit of the French, but it's also very Hollywood, a la late 80s, early 90s, Touchstone Pictures. Think Beaches, movies like that.
I think there are three different elements in this movie. It's kind of Chinesey, you know, in a way, but at the same time, it's kind of French New Wave-ish, European-ish, and Hollywood-y at
very
the same time.
Very Hollywood, I think. By the end, it's extremely Hollywood.
I think especially the second half makes it seem Hollywoody, but the first half is kind of French Chinese.
Yeah, it has a really interesting international flavor. So if you guys are curious, yeah, Comrades, a Love Story, definitely dig it up. Which is going to lead us into our second pick of the episode, which is going to be, wow, I can't believe we're actually going to discuss this, because it's a favorite movie of mine. But what's funny is how we're looking at the theme. This is going to be Wong Kar-wai's 1997 breakthrough movie. Well, in many ways, in terms of theme, he was already a huge success at this point. But this is 1997's Happy Together, starring Tony Leung Chiu-wai and Leslie Cheung. Mm-hmm. And in this film, they portray a male-male couple that are pretty much on the outs. So this film is going to be, if Comrades was about the beginning of a complex and beautiful relationship, this movie comes at it from the complete opposite end by saying this is the end of a relationship, and what a disastrous end. But it's a disastrous end in the most beautiful and an exotic place. We are telling the story of a couple of males who decide to abscond over to Buenos Aires, to Argentina, to work out their problems because they've been having difficulty for such a long time. And this film by Kar-wai is an exploration of it. A breakthrough movie in many ways, because it actually treats the subject with no saccharin, no sugar. It's just a fly on the wall. We're just watching these two people kind of just duke it out for about almost an hour and a half. And it's an incredible piece of work, even today. And I can imagine the Hong Kong film industry being really bothered by this movie, even by today's standards. I don't even know how the hell Kar-wai did it. You know, this is before his In the Mood for Love in 2046. This is after the great success of his film Chungking Express and Fallen Angels, and is a very impressive look at love at the end. Jenny, what are your initial thoughts on Happy Together?
I would have to say that, like what Mike said, you know, I thought director Wong Kar-wai was pretty ballsy for doing something like this, because homosexuality is not accepted in Hong Kong, especially back then. Now maybe it's a little bit better, but even then, I'm still thinking that general people have problems with accepting homosexuality as a norm. And Wong Kar-wai doing this, I thought he was taking a risk,
yeah,
big time. No matter how you slice it, he was taking a risk. Yeah. And this movie did pretty well from what I understand.
Yeah.
You know, and Kar-wai is the man, because he, no matter what, he makes it happen.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's just like what Mike was saying. This is dealing with two, you know, gay couples. And
a gay couple.
Mm-hmm. And it was very beautifully done, and I really loved it. I really liked the landscape. It was so beautiful. And the waterfalls, you know, that's like my favorite part, because it just makes me be at peace just by looking at it.
That's the, what's the location? Oh, the Iguazu Waterfalls.
Yeah, Iguazu Waterfalls, yes.
Yeah, which looks like the end of the world, because it's like a gigantic hole, mm-hmm, with no bottom. So you have this gigantic falls of water just pouring down this center hole of the earth, and it's just glorious helicopter photography by Christopher Doyle. Ding, ding. Remember I told you he was going to be in this somewhere involved, so yeah.
And also, another thing that I liked about it was music. Music made a big deal. It's like kind of like a painting. It's like a way of telling a story,
yeah,
you know. And I thought that was really awesome. And probably Mike will add more to this.
Yeah, one thing that Kar-wai had made a name for himself with his previous movies, with Days of Being Wild, Ashes of Time, especially Chungking Express and Fallen Angels, is that he takes full advantage of everything at his disposal. And what's funny is he's not using, like, sets. There's nothing phony about his movies. He goes to real locations. He goes and sees real people. He seems to be directing these actors in real places and sneaking a camera around, and it never feels artificial at all. And then on top of that, he tops it off with some incredible musical flavor that has an emotional pull and realism to it. You can almost taste the spiciness and the feelings that are going on in this this area, which we rarely see on film in Buenos Aires. And you know, and all of his movies sort of have a sort of Latin flavor to them. All of his movies seem to have a little bit of the Stone in it. I believe he grew up with a lot of that as a kid, right?
Yeah. I can kind of add on to that. From what I understand, well, he immigrated from Shanghai as a little kid to Hong Kong. And I think back then in Hong Kong in the 60s, they played a lot of Latin music on the radio, especially like Filipino Latin music, because you know how the Philippines was like, you know, pretty much influenced by Latin America and Spain and whatnot.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Hong Kong played a lot of like Filipino music with Latin flavor.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what he grew up with. And maybe that's the reason why Gawai has like such love for this kind of music.
Yeah, he seems his movies always seem to have a lot of rumba, a lot of tango, which is perfectly poetic considering that this film is about the push and pull between two very different men, very different people. You know, you have Tony, who is more or less the more responsible of the two, trying to make his way because they've run out of money in that area and that now they can't afford to go back home. And of course, at the beginning of the film, they break up, and a big chunk of the early part of the film is him trying to make money on his own, and he gets a job working for a bar as a tourist type of guide, a brochure hander. He hates the job, but he needs the money to leave, and of course, he keeps running across his recent ex, which is played by Leslie Cheung, who's a little bit more, I don't know, how would you say, vicarious, just without a care in the world, very caustic, violent, unpredictable. And, you know, you can see right away that this relationship is really, it's beyond repair. But the difficulties that happen between these two, because, you know, they're in a foreign land surrounded by strangers, and it's pretty gut-wrenching in places. Any thoughts on the performances of both Tony and Leslie? What do you think of their acting in this movie?
Well, both of them were really, really good, and they seemed very convincing as a gay couple.
Yeah, it's totally natural.
I mean, with Leslie, it's a different story. I could expect it from him because he is actually gay. And before he passed on in 2003, yeah, he was already gay, and he had a gay lover for 12 years. So that I can understand. But with Tony, he's like the most straight man you can meet in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And
brave actor.
And
really
at the
cool.
same time, he took the risk to play a gay man, and he did it well.
Yeah.
I was so mind blown by this, because at first when I heard about it, I'm like, Tony Leung playing a gay guy? I don't know about that, you know? But then once I saw, I was like, whoa, yeah, you know? I was so, like, blown away by his performance. I'm like, how can he possibly make me believe that he's really a gay man going through all this drama with his lover?
Well, how about this? Let's try this one bigger. One thing that Tony does amazingly is he doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue in the movie. I don't know if you noticed, but everything that he does is in his expressions and his gestures and in his actions. His body language speaks incredibly. And the film, you know, it feels more like a documentary. It keeps lingering in shots and like a fly on the wall, like you're sort of eavesdropping on these folks and in this world, and you completely buy it. It feels like a documentary about the end of a relationship, and you see all of these complex looks on Tony's face throughout the majority of the film, you know, about how hard he's trying to just move on and how hard it is to let go.
And, well, Mike was just saying that it felt like a documentary, yes, especially when these two characters were on the bus, you know,
yeah,
kind of fighting and bickering and
in
doing
the
their
back,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seemed like somebody, you know, took a hand cam,
yeah,
inside of the bus and filmed these people. That's,
yeah,
what it felt like. It felt very raw. It didn't seem like a sugar-coated movie that we would normally watch, even,
yeah,
for Hong Kong. So that's what kind of blew me away. And I think Wong Kar-wai is very good at, you know, making things very real,
yeah,
and surreal at the same time.
Yeah, and another thing is I also understand that he really doesn't really work with a script very much. He has like a general idea when he makes a film, and then he just sort of pieces it together with his actors, making the whole film really organic. It feels alive. And one thing that Kar-wai's movies always do, most of the time, with the exception of maybe 2046, which I like for different reasons, is movies crackle with life in a way that we rarely ever see in story cinema, anywhere. And Happy Together, as contradictory as the title sounds, you know, and it's a pretty sad film, in many ways. It is fascinating. Every moment of it, it's hard to take my eyes off of it. I've seen it numerous times already, and I'm still like, not only is Doyle's photography beautiful, but everything around the film is beautiful, but not in a glamorous way. It's unglamorous as all hell. Everything looks all, you know, worn and tattered and rusty and coffee stained, and, you know, you've got these kind of off-filtered colors. You know, the look of the film. Your thoughts on that?
The looks of the film, the thing that kind of blew me away was it starts out black and white. Like, I was asking Mike this earlier. How come it goes from black and white to color, you know? And I finally learned that when it goes black and white, it's like a flashback. And then once they're back to their current time, it kind of goes back to color again. And it's really beautiful the way Wong Kar-wai did that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not... I mean, movies have done it before. Even Memento has all done this before where they show the past. But it's filmed with a different type of film, grainy film stock. So it makes even the black and white flashbacks look even more surreal.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, even with the black and white, you remember originally I was asking you, is that a tint of turquoise and gray? You know, yeah. I couldn't really make out the colors because it looked kind of odd. It doesn't look like a typical black and white. It looked like they added a little bit of green or turquoise
it's
or
like
something.
It's like an imperfection that makes it look more unique.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I was watching it earlier.
Yeah, and you know, I think we can't have a discussion about Happy Together without talking about some of the surprises in the film, because naturally Tony's journey is to change, and the film offers some change in the form of a new character that comes in midway. A male character who works at the same place Tony does. Tony gets another job working at the kitchen of a restaurant. And there's an assistant there, like a younger, seemingly more fresh-faced, more optimistic boy in the character actor Chang Chen, whom fans might remember from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. He played the boyfriend of Zhang Jiyi. Yeah, I know him. And he was also in Red Cliff. Along with Tony as well.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty awesome connection. But yeah, he's very interesting because he offers another alternative for Tony, for him to find out what he really wants in life. And maybe that's what Tony really needed all along, more than just this sort of come again, go away kind of codependent, destructive relationship. Any thoughts on Chang Chen in the movie?
I thought he was like a fresh new face for, you know, Tony's character. I think Tony needed to see where he's at on a different perspective, because I think with, you know, Leslie Cheung's character, it was becoming kind of stale and it wasn't helping Tony develop as a person,
right,
and grow as a person. And I think this Chang character, you know, kind of helped him focus more on himself than this, you know, codependent drama queen person.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say it, but it seemed like, you know, he was like a stray cat.
Yeah.
You know, that's lost, and he needs some kind of guidance. But Tony's deep inside looking for guidance too. He can't be babysitting all his life.
Right.
And I think this Chang character brings something different to the table, saying, look, you should take care of yourself before you take care of somebody else.
Yeah.
And it seemed like Tony kind of needed that kind of indirect guidance of some sort.
Right.
And it's fate, I guess. I guess they use fate in this movie too, but kind of lightly, unlike Comrades.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting that we bring this up, because we were discussing this right as the film was ending again in our rewatch just earlier. And she brought up the idea that both films seem to be all about people who move from some part of Asia to another part in order to reach a certain goal, only to have life kind of get in the way a little bit and change things a little bit. However, where I think that Comrades, both main characters have goals, you know, not Leslie, but Leon Lai's character has his bride-to-be to bring over, and Maggie has money to give to her family and for her to, you know, I guess, prosper. You know, they're attainable, more surface-based goals. What's interesting about Happy Together is that in Kar-wai's universe that he's created here, our characters only went to Argentina really for a vague idea of getting their stuff together. And it's sort of like, it's almost a pessimistic view, because there's no real goal. They're just trying to get by. Our character Tony is just trying to make enough money to go away. He has to find his reasons. We don't really know what they are. They're more personal, more internalized, and we are left to kind of fill in the blanks ourselves. And, you know, the same thing goes for even Leslie Cheung's troubled boyfriend character. He has no idea what he wants, and therefore he's constantly looking for it in the arms of random men everywhere, and becomes a problem to others and himself. He always comes back, like you say, like a stray kitten coming back with new injuries so that Tony can bandage him and nurse him and help him out again. It's just, it's kind of heartbreaking to watch, because you know that these characters are not right for each other. And at the by the end of the film, it's not about whether or not they achieved anything, but if they will reach peace of mind. It's an internal thing.
I mean, at least maybe the timing isn't right. Maybe they are meant to be, but maybe the timing was all, like, kind of out of place, you know? They need to work out their stuff before, you know, they can actually come together and help each other out, you know?
I think that maybe the damage was so severe, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. It looked really bad. But
yeah, but I'm just saying, if that's the case. Yeah. But for the most part, I don't think it will work out, because especially with Leslie Cheung's character, he was a little too damaged for anything. Maybe he needs treatment. I don't know.
That's what we were talking about. There's a great set of images there that imply the idea of, well, he either needs to do one of two things. He needs to do more soul searching, or he needs therapy. There's a great visual with Tony as all this drama is going on through the midpoint of the movie, where Tony Leung, it's a beautiful shot. You know what I'm going to talk about, where he's on the back of a motorboat and he's leaning up against the edge of the boat, kind of looking a little bit kind of lost and forlorn with his head in his arms. And behind him is the water treading. And you see that they're like in a harbor, and the boat is constantly going. It's a stationary shot where it's just one shot looking at Tony while the water swirls and circles behind him, and the boat doesn't seem to be going in any sort of fashion where it's going towards any destination. And it's like he's kind of lost and adrift, going in circles and incapable of making a choice, until the movie starts to show visuals of, like, you know, roads, decisions, and maybe a train station at the end of the film where you make your decision and move on. And the movie is also dealing with the grief that comes with letting go of a part of yourself. Because it's almost like Carwai is suggesting that not only is the end of a relationship sad because you're saying goodbye to that person, it's also being sad and devastating because you're saying goodbye to a part of yourself that needed that person at that time. I don't know if you think about that, Jenny.
Well, I think Tony's character kind of sort of grew in a way, yeah. Because he does make a decision ultimately, and he goes to Taiwan, and then, you know, he just kind of goes around freely doing, you know, whatever. And the most important thing is he tried making a phone call to his father, although he didn't like do it, you know, yeah. on the film. But it seemed like he was going to eventually go do that. Yeah. So I guess he just wants to work things out and kind of travel around freely. And that's the reason why he went to Taiwan. And then, as a matter of fact, he went to his new friend Chang's, you know, family's restaurant,
yeah,
at the night market.
Yeah.
You know, and I really liked the scenery there too.
Yeah.
You know, the nightlife
the
and everything. It was really
cool.
Pretty.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing is, like, Tony's character trying to work things out. That's the most important thing. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, even though we saw all these locations, it was an internal journey, it seemed like to me. The journey of the soul.
At least he, you know, somewhat made up his mind to work things out with his father, you know, and, you know, visiting his new friend's family's restaurant and going to Taiwan. You know, he seemed more free than when we first saw him at the beginning.
Right. Yeah. It's a pretty awesome and open-ended experience for those who like their films international, and not only international, but very thought-provoking and atmospheric. And I highly recommend this film. I highly recommend Comrades as well, but I cannot recommend Happy Together enough, along with many of Carwai's movies also, which we'll probably discuss at another time. But Jenny, any last thoughts on both of these movies before we close out for today?
I really like both of the movies for different, very different reasons, and I do recommend both because, for one, Comrade has one of my favorite Hong Kong actresses of all time, which is Miss Maggie Cheung. I really like her dearly, and so does Mike. And you just need to see her performance. I just feel that, you know, you won't be disappointed for the most part. She's really good. And also for Happy Together, I think you need to see it because, you know, Wong Kar-wai's vision is, like, so beautiful. So I recommend both of these movies for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you want to see an actor like Tony Leung, who's done a lot of action films over the years, and really see where he really made his mark. You want to see him do dramatic work, fellas, and I highly recommend any of his works here, or even some of his other films, like he did for Ang Lee.
Less Caution.
You know, phenomenal stuff. Which is, it looks pretty taxing to me. But Happy Together, yeah. Prepare yourselves, because that's prepare to be bowled over and prepare to be challenged. Great movie. Anyway, guys, that's going to wrap it up for this week's, or not this week's, but this edition of Adventures on Infant Island. Hopefully we'll do more episodes more consistently. I promise we will be planning that in the future. With that said, this is Mike.
Jenny.
And we thank you again for listening. And once again, don't forget, our website is going to be at infantislandpodcast.blogspot.com. Once again, that's infantislandpodcast.blogspot.com. You could also find me and the guys over at Combo Attack at comboattackpodcast.wordpress.com. If you're also curious about me at Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/winterkaiju. That's winter, K-A-I-J-Y-U. And I believe Jenny's going to be at twitter.com/magicwandgirl10. Yeah, okay. Well, then, once again, this is Mike.
This was Jenny. Hope you enjoyed the show.
And thanks so much for listening. And hope to hear from you, or leave comments, anything, questions, suggestions, because we have some really cool stuff coming up for you.
Go see those movies.